It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Phileas Club. This is episode number 61 for October 2015. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Phileas Club. This is a show where we get together every month or so and we discuss the things that have been happening in our respective parts of the world. We span a table. Well, we have a table that spans across the globe. And today we have me, Patrick Beja from France. We have Turkey, who's back almost as usual now from Saudi Arabia. How's it going, Turkey?
I'm good. And how's Paris?
Paris is excellent. Thank you for asking on behalf of my, I was going to say countrymen, but city men and women. We thank you for your concern.
It sounds you're single at the moment.
Well, yes, my wife is in Finland for the weekend. So I've been watching a lot of Mad Max Fury Road and playing a lot of Dragon Quest Heroes. Both excellent. So
you're an addict, definitely an addict.
We're going to introduce our third guest in just a moment here. But before we do so, I wanted to thank the audience for the very warm reception and kind comments you've posted and sent through Twitter and other memes about the previous episode, basically the first special that we did. I've been meaning to do that. I wanted to do that for a while. But the previous episode was not a regular one. It was a special where Turkey and I discussed basically everyday life in Saudi Arabia for about an hour, and we covered things that I think we don't really hear about in the regular media. We discussed things like how kids go to school and how the prayer happens throughout the day and what the traffic is like in Riyadh and the kind of thing that you don't usually hear about, and sort of a snapshot of a normal day in Saudi Arabia. And I think it's we've achieved the goal we set out to achieve, and people have been really happy about the outcome. I think a lot of people were thought it was a great way of exploring a place in a way that is not just the tourist's eye or the sensationalist eye. So thank you very much for your comments. If you haven't listened to the show, it's the one just before on the feed, episode 60. And I really encourage you to go listen, because if you're interested in the kind of thing that come through in this show, that episode sort of amplifies that. So thank you again, Turkey, for agreeing to do it.
And no problem.
I think listeners were happy about it. And now, for today's show, we have another host, Paolo, who's back from, I was going to say Saudi Arabia, from South Africa. You have the same initials in the country.
Yeah. Thank you, Patrick. Thank you for having me back on. I'm really happy to talk to you about some of the world issues that are going on, and hopefully it's a good show.
I hope so too. So yes, you're back in South Africa. You've been traveling around. You're also you have roots in the in Greece, if I remember correctly. I don't think we're going to be talking about Greece though. That's kind of an old story. But we will have things to talk about from the South African the South African point of view. That's what we're going to do. But the first topic we're going to discuss is one from my home country, from the one I'm living in right now, France. And there isn't one huge story that's dominating the news cycle. I mean, if there was one, it might be the migrants crisis still, which I think we've covered extensively. There isn't really anything dramatically different happening, so it's still a very important story. But I think we're going to skip it, and I'm going to talk about something a little bit different, which not only is going to be interesting, I think, to the audience, but also I was interested in picking as a main story for my topic just because it would make Turkey happy. And that is the story of the aggression of the Air France managers at a local business company meeting at the beginning of the month. I know that that turkey made you laugh a lot and maybe even cry a little bit.
You French people are just crazy.
So you've heard about this, right?
Yeah, of course.
I think a lot of people have heard about it. And let me, for those who haven't, just before we do though, Paolo, have you heard about it?
It actually didn't really make the news here. I'm quite curious as to what happened. So let us know exactly what happened. It seems as though some disgruntled managers had an issue with Air France.
Yeah, not exactly. It was basically employees, regular employees that were... So, okay. I think it won't be a surprise to anyone that France is home to a lot of social I don't want to say social unrest because it's not really what it is. It's just that social activism might be a better word. Company.
I would say a lot of crazy people. Yeah.
Well, I'll get to that at some point. And I think I want to address that because it certainly seems like those people are kind of crazy. And we have a more than one example of that happening in the past few years. So basically, not syndicates, but unions, which might seem like syndicates sometimes, the unions are kind of powerful in the country, and at the same time, they're not. And before I get to that, let me explain exactly what happened. So there was a meeting at Air France, which is the big, transportation company that I think everyone knows. And you had a meeting with managers and high ranking executives in the company that were discussing the way to move forward, as they usually do. But there was, as there often is, a portion of the meeting that was discussing a reduction in numbers of people working there. There was going to be people who might get fired, some people who were going to be, basically was downsizing. And it's not uncommon. I mean, the air transportation, the plane companies, industry has been experiencing some difficulties in the past few years. It's the same all over the world. I don't think it's unique to Air France. We have the low-cost companies that are coming in and disrupting the entire market, and it has consequences on the big companies. That's pretty clear, pretty obvious. And these issues, not to make, light of the people that were disgruntled, but these issues keep coming back, and it seems like there's definitely some adaptation needed on the big companies' parts. But anyway, one of those meetings in the beginning of the month was disrupted by by most estimations, it's a few hundred, maybe 200 or 300 employees, basically invading the building where the people were having the meeting and actually physically molesting the people, the high-ranking executives that were conducting the meeting. There was the human resources person that actually got their shirt tore out completely. He was escorted out by security, had to climb a fence to get out of that place because he obviously couldn't go through the other way where the employees were. There wasn't any actual serious physical harm that came to the people. you know, they weren't beaten up. There wasn't anything like that, but they were certainly intimidated and they feared for their safety at the point where the aggression happened. And they got their shirts tore out because of the physical violence of the people invading that meeting. So describing this just like this, I'm going to go, I know, Turkey, that you can't wait to talk about this, but first reaction, first impression to Paolo, what's your feeling about this?
It's interesting because in South Africa, we also have a very unionized outlook on certain industries, and protest is something that's very prevalent in our country as well. So it's interesting, we've also had something not similar, but a major protest that's happened recently. And it's also turned a bit ugly, maybe more ugly than what's happened there and a little bit more serious than a downsizing of Air France. But it's interesting how it gets to that point, I think. How do they go from, okay, we're really angry, we're going to be saying something, now we're going to bust in the doors and tear off people's shirts. And I mean, what's the end result there? What's the end goal for those guys?
I think that's an excellent question. I'm going to get to the consequences of this in a little bit, but in order to understand how it can get to that extreme, I think it's very important to understand the makeup of the union environment in France. In France, unionization is, ironically, as socialized as the country is, very few people are actually in a union. It's very different from one frame of reference is the US. I know there are, other countries where actually a lot of people in some professions are part of a union. And so what that creates is a union that represents a much wider scope of the industry it represents. In France, since very few people, it's not mandatory, and very few people actually are part of the union, what happens is that the makeup of the union is usually mostly the most extreme portions of the employee basis. So the union still negotiates, the deals and the contracts for the entire profession, but it's held, and the stakeholders and the actual people deciding how to do it, how to manage the union, is made up of people that are convinced enough about the social importance of those things to be in that union. So it's usually people who are louder than the average employee. Now, I don't want to imply that the people who did those acts were part of the unions. Actually, most of the unions condemned what happened there. It was really a bunch of extremists. Maybe you could compare it to hooligans at a football match. But yeah, that usually the unions and the social activism, especially on the work portion of social activism, is very militant in France, and that's partly because of that makeup of the unions. Turkey, what did you, how was it reported on? Was just enlighten us with your wisdom.
My wisdom, let's see. Well, you French people are crazy. And apparently the revolution wasn't enough. You didn't cut enough heads off, so you need to do some more.
What, did you get some actual report? Because I know it's been reported on in many countries. Did it make it to the Saudi news, or did you get the news from other sources?
No, it wasn't Saudi news, but it wasn't a big news, but it was covered.
Yeah, of course.
So it was mentioned and everybody did see it. Most of the coverage I saw was on BBC, personally. And to be honest, I really don't get you French people, because this is not the first time and this is not very unique. I remember you got the Uber thing.
Yeah.
Have the Air France thing. Then you had that factory for tires where they took hostages, their managers as hostages in the factory. So I really don't get what do these people actually get out of it when they threaten lives and they do stuff like this. If I was a businessman, honestly, I don't know about French business people, but if I was a businessman in France, I would just shut down the entire business and leave that country immediately. if every time I'm going to do something that for me personally is to benefit my own business, and my life is going to be threatened, why would I even continue doing business there? And that's really what I don't understand.
So I think there is a really important, not even caveat, but explanation to do here. You're making very broad generalizations about this whole thing. First of all, the life was probably not threatened. It was scary, of course, but the lives weren't threatened. And second of all, it's not every time. And I understand that the fact that it happens at all is kind of mind-blowing for a lot of people, but it definitely isn't a common occurrence.
It's not about whether it happens every time, but it is common. In France, it is common.
To put Turkey's credit, there are other countries that are in the same boat, but it does seem to happen fairly frequently. And maybe it's got to do with the news that's happening in France, and that's really the only thing that they've got to report on. You know, in other countries where this might be going on, where you have people protesting, it may not make the top headline because there are other major issues. So I guess the real question is this a common thing because there's not major other incidents in France that they have to report on?
No, I think it's definitely, it's more common than in other countries because mostly it doesn't happen in other countries. But I think what I want to get at is it's kind of like looking at the US and seeing Donald Trump and thinking, the politicians in the US are insane. They might very well be, but they're not all like Donald Trump let me finish just this thought. Or looking at Saudi Arabia and thinking, you have some religious extremists that want to stone to death every person that does something bad, and thinking, well, this is how it is for every Saudi, and I don't want to, again, I don't, or looking at a social unrest event in South Africa, or looking at a neighborhood where things are actually like people don't go because it's dangerous or something, and thinking South Africa is a country where no one should want to live, right? So it's not that it doesn't happen. It's not that it's not an issue, but it's limited in scope, and most people aren't like that. And most people, actually the entire, I would say 98% of the political spectrum, condemned those actions very strongly. And actually there were 5 people arrested in the 2 or 3 days following that event. So it's not accepted. It's not anything that people think is normal.
Let me ask you, in your circle of friends or people you know, do you find that people praise them for doing what they're doing and saying, no, they're standing up for what they believe in? Is it a mixed thing, or is everybody kind of like, no, these guys are just out of their mind? They took it way too far. They shouldn't have taken it that far.
So I think my usual social environment is relatively high middle class, roughly. Mm-hmm. So I think my friends are more right-leaning than left-leaning. But usually the worst you would commonly hear is, well, their situation really sucks, and I understand they're super frustrated, but that doesn't justify what they did. I think that is the most common accepting reaction to that thing. There might be a couple of very extreme communist type people that are going to say, and that actually did say, we talk about the violence towards the managers, but we never talk about the violence, the social violence that those poor employees are being victimized with those huge companies that make immense profits and that keep downsizing and keeping all the money to themselves with their golden parachutes. And, that's something you might hear on a very extreme far end of the political spectrum. But by and large, most, the large majority of the people would not think this is in any way acceptable, and they would say nothing justifies violence.
Can I ask you something, Patrick? You said that the union condemned it, but was still in somewhat involved in the way the employees deal with the situation. There's something that they do in America, specifically New York, that I think is quite, I don't know how effective it is, but I think it's quite apparent. They have this giant blow-up rat. I don't know if you've seen pictures of this thing. Where they
but it's interesting. Hilarious. Keep going.
So what they do is when the union, because New York's obviously a very union-heavy city, they when the union gets upset about something because they've lowered wages or they didn't do something the union wanted, or they're using people who are not unionized, what they end up doing is they take this blow-up rat. It's a giant rat that gets blown up by like a small generator, and they put it right in front of the business. So right in on the sidewalk, right in front of the business. That way, everybody who walks by knows that those people have wronged the union.
I mean, it's kind of a public shaming kind of thing.
I think it's quite effective because whenever I see it, I'm like, those people really didn't, you know, are not playing ball with whoever. I mean, whether I agree with it or not, I don't know. But it's made me aware of the problem, you know. Versus, let's say, the stuff that happened at Air France, if they just kind of accepted it, no one would really know it's a problem unless people made a stink, you know?
I think there are different ways of making a stink. And, you know, some people might just burn tires or... one of the issues is that the unions being as... you know, because of the issue of the makeup of the unions, they make a stink a lot of the times. It's not, again, if we take the U.S. that a lot of people know as a point of comparison, in the U.S., when a union actually strikes, it's a big issue. It's a big problem because they do it usually when they have renegotiations of the ongoing contracts for 5 or 10 years. And it's a big problem. And that means that they've actually tried to discuss with the, you know, management, but they didn't manage to find a solution. In France, the default action is kind of to strike. So that big stink doesn't really have media impact anymore. So I think that's why we get to bigger, higher issues that people get frustrated with, because it diminishes the power of the union. And then they have to do something more. Again, I'm not saying that the union was responsible for what happened at that Air France office, but
you say the common attitude in France is more of a knee jerk reaction. Well, we don't like this. We're going to strike.
Yeah,
we're not just going to let's try to figure it out. Let's try to find a solution that we don't strike. They're just like, we're just going to do it because that's what we know to do. That's how we're going to deal with the situation.
I think it's a fair assessment. It's kind of like when you look at the political parties. Initially, when you talk just to your political party, you have to please your base, and you're going to be a little bit leaning towards your, you know, the extremes of your base a little bit more than when you go into a general election where you have to start pleasing everyone. So you're going to recenter a little bit. Well, the unions are only ever trying to please their base. And their base is usually, since it's only a few people, a few percentage of the population that is unionized, it's that extreme that they're serving all the time. So obviously, anytime anything happens, they're like, F everything, we're going to strike. So
let me ask you this question then. If someone goes on strike in France, is the company that they're striking against obligated to still pay them a salary?
Yes.
So that while they're on strike, they're still getting paid full salary.
So I don't want to say something inaccurate. I'm not 100% sure they have to pay the salary. They might not. But the first thing the union negotiates to return to work is payment of the salaries for the days they're on strike.
Well, maybe that's the issue, right? Because
No, I agree. It diminishes there are a lot of issues there. I think we're getting a little bit away from the question of the aggression specifically, but you're right. It pushes that will to strike a lot more. People just don't care. Honestly, I do think there are even, I'm not making this up and I'm not helping my case here. There are people who go on strike to celebrate a huge strike from a few years before. So.
Okay, so yeah, I suppose there's something there, but
yeah.
But the aggression that happened at Air France, what was the attitude at Air France? Did they end up letting go those people? Is it still up in the air? Is there any resolution at this stage?
We don't have a resolution. There were five people who were arrested, and everyone expressed, 99% of the people expressed deep consternation about what happened. So what I'm trying to say is, this is not representative of the French population. It's a few extreme cases. It's kind of a, you know, I think I was reminded of the conversation we were having. I can't remember if you were there, Turkey, but it might have been with Mahmoud after the events of Charlie Hebdo in the beginning of the year in France. We were trying to gauge the attitude of people in the Arab world, and we talked a lot about insults and how it's appropriate to take physical action and how people regard that physical action, and you know, the whole concept of fighting words and stuff like that. And something I think Mahmoud mentioned, which sort of struck me, was, of course, they don't condemn. They don't condone. Thank you. I'm thanking myself. They don't condone the actions of the terrorists, but it's more of a, well, what did you think was going to happen feeling? It's like, you know, you're poking the bear. And of course, at some point, the bear does something that's going to turn out to be dramatic. And he was mentioning this, you know, as a way to try and understand the feeling of some of the people in, you know, the Arab world. And I think it's an interesting way of looking at it, because for us, there is, when we look at this, there's nothing but revolt when we see this. So I think if you reverse the situation, obviously not, it's not as bad and it's not as horrible in any way. But if you reverse the situation, we look at it and think, yeah, of course it sucks completely and it's unacceptable, but it's on the level of, if you know, you're going to poke those crazy people, at some point, one of them is going to do something stupid, and we don't want those people here. We don't want them to do it. We don't want them to even exist, but we know they do, right? So that's, I think, kind of almost a way of explaining our reaction towards the Uber car burning and that aggression and some other aggressions that we've seen before. And it doesn't make them in any way acceptable or understandable. We're very pissed off, but we understand that's something that might happen. And just as that feeling doesn't make, you know, the Arab world a bunch of terrorists, it doesn't make us in France in any way agree with the ones that were aggressive. So do you, Turkey, does that help you understand the feeling? Or
you have no idea how much I'm enjoying this.
Please expand. Please tell me why.
Because you're being so defensive.
Well, it's
you're an Arab now. Welcome to the world.
Well, you know, my horrible stereotype is car burning and shirt ripping. It's bad, but it's not building collapsing and a journalist slaughtering. So
welcome to our world, Patrick. Yeah. Welcome.
But, you know, I'm trying to really get that parallel going. And it might be unfortunate because it's very different levels of intensity. But you get what, you understand what I mean, Turkey, right? It's like,
I do, yeah. Of course I do understand. I'm just, I understand it too well.
And I think maybe some Americans might also understand that, you know, there are a lot of extremes in the U.S. as well. There are issues with gun control. There are issues with, well, Donald Trump recently and things like that. But I think it might be a template for how some extremes color the image of a country in other situations as well. So anyway, all right, Turkey, I was hoping you were going to be enjoying this a little bit more and commenting on it a little bit more.
I don't need to comment. I'm enjoying your reaction.
Okay. All right, fair enough.
You're reacting. And to be honest, I can't argue with most of the stuff you said. So.
All right. So, okay, so I did a good job. You know, I sort of thought about my thought process a lot with your... what I knew your reactions would be in mind. So I kind of, you didn't, just by looking at me from, you know, afar, you sort of influenced my outcome. It's like you're Schrodinger's Patrick. All right, man. Turkey, tell us about McDonald's suing cockroaches, or what's happening there?
Okay, so right now on Twitter, there is a movement that is boycott McDonald's. Basically, there's this guy in...
Wait a second. So you have McDonald's.
What?
No, that's something that people might not know.
Are you telling me there's a country without a McDonald's in this world?
I don't
world?
Know. Well, if there was one, I would not have been surprised if it was Saudi Arabia.
No, Turkey,
is there a food franchise in Saudi Arabia called Hungry Bunny?
Yes.
This is something I don't think that exists. I don't know. Exists in the rest of the world. There's a fast food chain called Hungry Bunny in Saudi and some of the Middle Eastern countries.
Yeah, I think it's a local brand.
It's an interesting name.
there's a few local brands here. We have but most of them are not international known. But they would be popular in the GCC and maybe some Arab countries.
Is McDonald's the like it is everywhere else? Probably one of the most popular, or is it just kind of like another fast food franchise?
No, it's one of the top. Most popular fast food franchises, and there's a McDonald's every 500 meters here in Riyadh, I think. And you find an empty piece of land. 2 months later, you come, there's a McDonald's operating there. I swear, I have no idea how they do this at all.
So obviously, it's all halal food and all of that. Right?
Yeah, of course, it's all halal. So for McDonald's right now, so there's a boycott McDonald's movement on Twitter. And basically the reason for this is what happened. There's this guy in Jeddah city who went to a McDonald's, and according to him, he ordered food and his Coke, he found a tiny cockroach inside his drink.
Okay.
So he complained to the municipality. The municipality did not respond. So he went ahead and he posted the photo on Twitter with CCing the municipality and reporting this, that he found a cockroach in his drink. So the next step is the municipality saw that photo and that tweet. They went to the restaurant that he reported the branch, and they shut down that branch. Their official wording, the municipality said, we went to the location, we confirmed the situation, and we closed down the branch.
Confirmed the situation that there were cockroaches running around?
They said, we confirmed the situation. Basically, okay. That means they did find that there was a problem in cleanliness or something in that branch.
And we confirmed they were putting tiny cockroaches in every Coca-Cola.
So why wouldn't he approach McDonald's? Why would his first course of action be to approach the municipality?
Municipality, we are having a huge problems here in Saudi about monitoring a lot of these restaurants, every type of brand, whether it's local brand, it's an international brand, it's a smaller place, a huge place, a huge branch. It's a huge problem of cleanliness and taking care of the way that we don't have the standards that you would find in the West or in the States or in Europe and so on. So one of this is them. This is them trying to force, because if you go to the restaurant, they say, "Okay, no problem. Here, take this. It won't improve. It won't fix anything. they will just shut you down and
right.
maybe
so
give
you
some money.
So they'll give you a free meal and that's it.
Yeah, so it won't fix the problem. It fixes his problem immediately, but not the problem as an overall problem. So the thing is, so they closed down the place. The next day, the guy got a phone call from McDonald's. On Twitter, they got a tweet from McDonald's. They said, you know what, we would like your phone number. We would like to talk to you about this and try to resolve it. And so he sent his phone number. Apparently, they tracked down his phone number. They figured out who he is, where he lives. And the next thing he knew, he got a call from the police asking him to come over to the station where he was arrested.
Oh, arrested?
He was arrested. McDonald's has accused him of, what's the English word to share?
Defamatory.
Yeah. Defamatory statement?
Yeah,
libel, basically.
Statements. Yeah. So that's what they accused him with, and he ended up in jail.
Wow.
But is that arrestable? Is that an arrestable thing in Saudi?
Yes, in Saudi it is. Yes, it is.
So it if is, you have a business or something, and I say, oh, it's a rubbish business because of this and this, and it's not true, that I can get arrested.
Yes, exactly.
Well, apparently, even if it is true, because what he did he do more? Like, did he just say, there's a cockroach in my drink? Or did he say, McDonald's serves cockroaches for all their customers and they suck?
No, he said, in my drink, I found a cockroach. So what happened after that is the guy, to get out of jail, he had to write a letter that says that my name is this and this, and in regards of what happened from me against McDonald's about publicizing this, that I would like to say that my accusations were not true. The cockroach, and it was a misunderstanding, a cockroach was there, happened to be there because I did not take good care of my drink, and it came from outside into my drink. And it never came from inside the restaurant. So he had to write that, sign it, and then he had to tweet that on his account to say that he was wrong and he's sorry and the company is completely innocent of any wrongdoings.
Okay, so what's the reaction to that? Oh, go ahead, Paolo.
No, I was going to ask. So the issue, I suppose, is that he put it on Twitter. It wasn't that he made the statement. It's that he put it on Twitter and then it was all public, I suppose.
Yes. Then McDonald's issued a statement that said that they checked on it, and it turned out that the guy deliberately put the cockroach there to try and take money out of the company, blackmail the company.
So, okay, let's be very sort of, I don't want to say accepting, but it might be the case that he's trying to scam McDonald's.
No. It's not a scam because he reported McDonald's to the municipality. If he wanted to scam McDonald's, he would have purely targeted McDonald's without mentioning the municipality or asking for the municipality to come in and check the place out.
Okay. So is that something that can easily happen in Saudi Arabia? Like the companies have free reign and free power? I'm telling you, if those managers had been beaten up a couple of times, they would not be doing that.
The thing is, so now there's a huge outrage on Twitter. There's a huge movement that says boycott McDonald's and so on.
Ah, right.
A lot of people are also asking the guy that was arrested to sue McDonald's because the fact that they issued a statement that say that he deliberately put the cockroach trying to blackmail, which is completely not what he wrote in his statement that to get out of jail. It's kind of them doing the same thing to him, what they accused him doing to them.
Right.
Because they posted his entire name and everything.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a huge situation right now against McDonald's. People are really pissed on the Twitter, and it's being talked about a lot. And to be honest, this is an outrageous thing because we're not used to it. Usually companies don't do this.
That's what I was going to ask. It seems like it would be something. It's painting a picture of, you know, one of those countries where you just pay the government and you can go arrest someone, have someone arrested, and you know.
Yeah, it's not good PR. I don't know who who's the idiot in McDonald's who thought it was a good idea to sue the guy and arrest him and make all of this fuss out of this? Because trust me, this whole situation about a cockroach in a drink, it's so common in Saudi, people would have forgotten it within 1 week.
Okay. So there's definitely an idiot behind this, and it's not... Okay.
A huge idiot.
So do you think the issue is with the way the system has handled it, or do you think the issue is with just the companies that are coming in and dealing with things badly?
The situation is most of these problems we have them here in Saudi with these restaurants usually is because a lot of these people who work in these restaurants are undereducated expats. They're either from the subcontinent and from other countries in Asia. And most of them don't have even the education. A lot of them never even worked in fast food or anything. And the first thing they come here, that's what they put them to do. Mm. So they don't really know how to deal with things, and you don't have enough management to take care of it. So you have a lot of problems like this. And this is not... Someone reporting, I found something. I swear, I'm on Twitter... There's a report about some company, some restaurant, some bakery, some place that had this or that in their food. It's very common, and it's I've never seen anybody suing anybody for it.
So how did it get out of hand?
An idiot in McDonald's decided that he wants to make something out of this, and he decided that this is the way to do it. And usually companies don't do this. This is the laws here are mostly used by individuals. If you attack an individual, then they usually, to protect themselves and their reputation, they go and they sue you. Mm. It's rarely used by companies to sue you because you posted something like this. And this McDonald's is not like the first time McDonald's have ever heard something like this. And to be honest, McDonald's had just crossed the line in what they did. And it's really, I'm really disappointed in what happened. From McDonald's, from my point of view, because I never thought they would go so low as doing this. And unless they have definite proof and putting a statement, oh, the guy did it and he confessed, that's not proof that he did it. If you arrest the guy, then how is he? Of course he's going to confess. You gave him a choice. Gave him a choice. Either stay in jail until you go to court or just confess and we'll get you out immediately.
Yeah, it does reek of, you know, the Spanish Inquisition a little bit. But, you know, it's really interesting because you could tell me that it went, you know, that it was a situation for both things and I would believe you. Basically, you could tell me, oh, yeah, that's how it works here. It's like the companies that you know, anyone can get you arrested and then you have to say what they want you to say. And that's just the way it works. And I would believe you because I guess I just don't know enough about the country. If now you're telling me this is outrageous and people are very angry about it, and I also believe you because I just don't know, so I have to trust you on this. But
well, definitely, and I think McDonald's are going to be hurting for the next few days and weeks, both financially and from PR perspective, because they have done something. They could have as easily done it in a different way. Thank you for reporting this. We checked our restaurant.
Yeah, of course,
there was a small problem. We took care of it. We promised you it's never going to happen. And you make a good PR for everybody that you actually looked at something and took care of it.
Yeah.
But if you ever go and accuse us of something, we're going to hunt you down and put you in jail.
I think the next Twitter thing should be that everyone reports cockroaches in their drinks from McDonald's. Although that might be actual libel, but
Turkey, was there a hashtag associated with this? Like,
yes, it's boycott McDonald's. It's in Arabic.
Okay.
There is a trending hashtag in Saudi. Let me see if it's trending highly right now.
It wasn't something weird like free the hot cockroach or hashtag.
Free the cockroach. I like it.
No, it wasn't something like that.
Okay. All right. Well, you will have to keep us appraised of the evolution of that cockroach situation. I'm very curious to see it. I'm sure McDonald's is going to do something, but We'll see. Let us know in the next episodes. Paolo, what about Saudi? No, what? Damn it! What about South Africa?
You know, they don't even use SA in their domains or anything. Why are you mixing Saudi
with South
Africa?
We don't
know. They use Z.
Just for that reason, so we don't get it confused.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously it doesn't work. Turkey, you're not only influencing my testimony about the aggression, aggressive employees, you're also influencing my perception of the world. It's the Saudis' evil magic at work. Go ahead, Paolo.
So something, and I hope I do the story justice, is because it's become quite a serious one here. The government has started changing taxes in South Africa, and one of the things that has come out is that a lot of the universities that are subsidized by the government are increasing their student fees. It's not an unusual thing around the world. Universities increase their fees as years go by.
I want to disappoint you for a minute. College education is free in Saudi. They actually pay you a salary to go to college.
And it's free in some other countries in Europe. Oh, I know that.
But wait a second. Sorry. They pay you to go to college?
Yes, they pay you a monthly salary to go to college.
Nice. Well, I guess when you need a more educated population, that's a good way to spend your oil money. Yes. Yeah. All right. Sorry. Keep going, Paolo.
So one of the things that happened was a lot of students started to protest for good reason. The income level of a lot of students who are going to university these days isn't extremely high. And a lot of them at this point, we call them the born frees, because they were born free after 1994, after Mandela and everything happened, which makes them a very unique part of our country, right? They weren't influenced directly like a lot of other people from the past were by the previous government. And they have been protesting, and it's turned quite ugly. It started at one university, one of our main universities called WITS.
Sorry, let me interrupt you for just a second on that term of born free. How are they defined? I mean, they weren't influenced by the pre-Mandela, pre-freedom era, obviously, but how does it shape their reasoning or their thought process, or what do you define when you're saying a born free? What are they?
So the main difference, obviously, is there's still obviously residual effects, but they weren't subject to direct government
discrimination. Yeah,
so they weren't part of that that regime that said you can't do this because of the race you are. You can't. They're in a world now that they can. Okay, yes, there's still some residual effects from the past that have caused a lot of people in that that don't have the same opportunities.
So they were born after the apartheid was abolished.
Yes, sorry, I should have made that more clear.
Yeah,
after 1994, when the apartheid came to an end, new government took hold, and it's a democratic government. And these children who are now going to university are at the age range, the majority of them at least, are at the age range of being born free because they were born after 1994.
So that means they're more likely to protest or to...
No, not necessarily. No? Protest has been a part of our history for a long time, because during the apartheid era, there was no ability for people to have a voice, especially those who were discriminated against. One of the things they would do would be protest. And it generally didn't end very well for them, but it was the only power they had. So it's become very much part of the South African culture to protest. And the born frees have just kind of taken that on board. And look, the students are not all born frees. I mean, there's still a lot of students who are older than that, and they're using it as a tool to have a voice. Because with the current government, I don't think a lot of people feel like they have a voice, because it's kind of they're the big cheese in the room. They have the majority of the vote. They have the majority of parliament. And it's very difficult to do something that they dislike, right? So if they say the budget is going to be this, everybody has to deal with it because the current government is such a majority.
How is the current government? Is it representative of the population, or is it predominantly white? Or
no, it's very, I think, representative of the population in terms of race, majority being black, and the majority of people in the current government, which is the ANC, is black. And they were the ones who liberated. They were the party that liberated South Africa. They were given the credit for doing a lot of the legwork there. And they're still in power in government today. The ANC has a majority, like I said. And unfortunately, what's happened is over time, they've become very corrupt, very persuaded by money and you know, companies, and it has skewed from what the people want and what they had promised the people pre-94. So I think there's a lot of people who feel like they've been wronged, but they don't know really where to turn to other than the ANC. And that's where a lot of people turn to protest.
So that's, you mean it's sort of getting out of the strictly university fees question and becoming a wider protest about the government, or?
Well, me personally, I think that's where it's turning. You know, it's becoming a bigger issue because what happened was they set the fees up. They gave the budget speech. The budget speech barely mentioned what was going on with the protest because they basically were trying to storm parliament, get inside parliament. The students were trying to get inside parliament. They went to the union buildings. And during all of this, the ANC kind of didn't really acknowledge it. And it made the situation worse, obviously, because they were just kind of like, it'll go away, whatever, you know. And it's not going away. No, it's kind of subsided now because what the president did was talk to a lot of the student bodies that were kind of running the show of these protests. And they agreed to settle on zero fees increases.
Oh, but, so they went back on what they wanted to do.
Yes, which is good for the students, but there's still an underlying issue, and it seems as though people, even though they got what they wanted, they're still not exactly happy. They're not happy with the current situation. They're not happy with how the government dealt with it. So it'll be interesting.
What do they want, though? Because they got the best thing they could hope for, right? They got the complete cancellation of the raise of the fees.
Right. And I suppose it's just kind of a beacon to other problems that have happened in the country where the government should have sort of, they should have made, I mean, I don't know if I agree with this at this stage, but the people are looking for free education. They're looking for a free university to attend. You know, that's what they were promised in a lot of ways. And it's not getting fulfilled. And I guess it highlights other issues, like there's service delivery issues in the country, and there's problems with people who have had no opportunity and still have no opportunity, and they're disgruntled, you know.
Well, I was wondering, I've been hearing a lot of complaints in South Africa about the current government, but why hasn't it changed? So, well, it's not something new. It's like I've been hearing it now for the last few years.
It's a good question, because what's happened culturally in South Africa is the ANC were the liberators. They are a party that liberated South Africa, and they did a good job, and they got us out of a horrible situation. But they've, like I said, they've not been doing the best job recently, and people are upset with it. But because they're so sold on the idea that they must vote ANC, especially people who don't have a brilliant education, don't have a lot to their name, don't have a real good understanding of politics, all they know how to do is vote ANC. And there are some new parties that are starting to emerge. One of them is called the EFF, and they are economic freedom fighters. That's what they call themselves. And they are very
very socialist in their points of view. They want to socialize everything. You know, it's very much the other extreme of everything. And they're starting to gain a lot of traction, but not enough to convince the average voter to change their vote from ANC, because they think voting against ANC is
almost betrayals.
Yes,
sacrilege. Exactly. It's sacrilege. Yeah.
So it's they, it's.
I've talked to a lot of people who vote ANC, or I've talked to a fair amount of people who vote ANC, and if they would ever change their vote, and they would rather not vote than change their vote. You know, which is not the solution either, but that's the way they see it. They're, if they're unhappy with somebody who's in that position, or the current president, or whatever the ANC is doing, they're not going to say, I'm going to vote for so-and-so because I think they might do a better job. They're just like, I'm not going to be involved at all.
I'm curious, do the Born Frees have the same state of mind, or do they not care that ANC
is... This is the interesting thing, is because the older generation are held on to this idea of being a part of this group, and the Born Frees, even though they have influence from their parents and people who are very strong ANC supporters, they may have the ability to start looking at the situation a little bit better, because they also have better access to education. You know, they are a little bit more educated. There is a larger majority of them that can see the picture in a better light. And I personally think that they are going to be voting in other directions. What direction, I can't tell you, but I think that it is going to change the way the ANC operates, because they're going to lose their majority eventually, and they're going to have to change the way they operate, which is what democracy is all about.
Yeah, it seems like, from what you're saying, this is sort of the generational shift that is starting to happen, where ANC should start thinking that they can't just keep relying on the sort of the image they've had from 94, and now some people are going to start to eat away at their I want to say heritage, almost not their heritage, but I mean in French it's héritage, it's legacy. Well, not even legacy. Like, basically, yes, you understand.
And the thing is, they have to. They're getting to a point now where they can't point the finger anymore. They still point the finger a lot to the past, but it's one of those things where there's a million potholes, let's say, in the road, and they say, "Well, the previous government is the problem." And it's like, not really. I mean, there's a pothole in the road. You fill the pothole, you fix it. You know, that's a simple solution to an uncomplicated problem. And they're running out of time to point that finger. You know, they've got to really start resolving issues like the one with the student protests, where they should have dealt with it. I mean, if that's what the students want, they should be managing the funds in the universities better, you know, and that's the core of where that problem is they could do a 0% increase on fees, but they've just got to manage how they allocate fees in the few universities better, and they didn't really care, so they just let it run the way it was going to run, and it's just mismanagement, really.
Right. Okay, I guess that is about it for our stories. I don't think it wasn't a huge month for world news, but unless Turkey has some, I guess this is you already told us about your funny story from Saudi Arabia. It served both purposes. So I think that is going to be it for our show today. Thank you so much, guys, for being on. Can you please let us know where people can find you if they want more of Paolo or Turkey, starting with Paolo?
Well, you can find me, I'm not super active on Twitter, but you can find me on Josie Paolo on Twitter, and you can find me on the same handle on Instagram. So Josie Paolo is my handle on Instagram.
I'll have the spelling in the show notes. It's but it's J-O-Z-E.
Yes.
Turkey, what about you?
You can find me on Twitter at Turkey Albella, T-U-R-K-I-A-L-B-A-L-L-A.
Can you say that again faster?
at TURKIALBALLLA.
Perfect. Excellent. And if you want to hear more Turkey, as I was saying at the beginning of the show, there's also the special from a couple of weeks ago called A Day in Riyadh, which you can go listen to. As I mentioned, I thought it turned out pretty well, and listeners seem to think so as well. So you can go and listen to that. It's in the feed, obviously, and on the site FrenchSpin.com, which is the site where I host my English language shows. The French ones are at FrenchSpin.fr. You can go check that out if you speak the language or not and just want to have fun, listen to me speaking French. And of course, I am Not Patrick on Twitter. I'm also Not Patrick on Facebook. I'm trying to think when I want to do the next special episode, but we'll see if it happens in November or not. I'm not certain yet. So if it doesn't, we'll be back with a regular episode at the end of the month. And of course, you remember that you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/thePhileas Club. The special episodes were, I initially set them as a milestone on the Patreon. I ended up wanting to do them too much, so I just went ahead and did it anyway. But we're not incredibly far from that milestone. So if you think the show is interesting and brings you a little bit of a different perspective, a perspective you wouldn't get in the regular media, at least that's what we're trying to do. So if you think it works, please do consider going to the Patreon and giving out a buck or two. If you can spare them, it would be very much appreciated. If you can't do that, then maybe you might want to consider telling people about the show, people who you think might appreciate it or not. You never know. They might think it's a boring show and not realize that it's super fun. We talk about, I believe, I didn't really quite listen to what Turkey was saying, but I think it was a cockroach suing McDonald's. I think that's what he was talking about. So there you go. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for supporting on us on Patreon. If you do so, I love you forever and immensely. And we will talk to you again in the next episode. Bye, everyone. So what's the program for the next few months, Paolo? You're in Saudi Arabia? You're staying there?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.